Well, in the winter time in 1986, I was in Berlin, Germany, and I knew very little history at the time of why this big wall went right through the city, dividing East and West Berlin. I was with a friend, and we experienced first West Berlin. We were just there for a weekend. But because I didn't know that much intellectually, I knew a little bit about it, but not a lot about it, I really experienced it more from that emotional and sensual level. And so we first went to this holiday fair. It was a classic, traditional German holiday fair. St. Nicholas was there, and there were warm lights, and we tasted Glögg for the first time, that great warming, spiced red wine, and there was music, live music on all the street corners, and it was just one of those, you know how it is in the holidays, it's just that joyful kind of celebratory experience, you know, big time, because you're in this, you're in a big city, and then you've got all these lights, and then you've got all these people, and this joy happening. The next day, we went to East Berlin, and so we had to walk through Checkpoint Charlie, which was intimidating in and of itself, with all these security guards standing there with guns, and as we walked from West Berlin to East Berlin, I felt like I was walking through, in West Berlin, a full-color movie with a musical score into a silent black and white film. I mean, it was that distinct. And as I went into East Berlin, we started exploring a little bit. We went into a couple of stores, and everything was gray and sort of blah. Even the sales clerks had just sort of expressionless, kind of their faces were expressionless. We were sitting in our little tiny gray hotel room, and I looked out the window at this kind of black and white scene, which is what it all felt like and looked like to me, and suddenly I noticed something really interesting. There would be a vibrant splash of color. A bright blue car would drive by. A woman walked by with hot pink high heels. And it was so, you know, noticeable against the backdrop. And they seemed to me to be symbols like hope and the spirit of rebellion and passion that bled through of a people that needed to express themselves, right? That is always something we need to do, is to be able to express ourselves. What's interesting is this big wall that divided a city and a country divided the same, you know, a group of people that shared the same culture, the same history, the same language. All that divided them was ideology, communism and capitalism. So I know in our world today, as we see more and more of this, or maybe I won't affirm that, but we see divisiveness, you know, in our ideologies, I know that's something that we hold in our hearts and our minds as a concern. So I'm happy to tell you that on November 9th, 1989, a miracle happened. The wall was knocked down. It came tumbling down. I'm sure there was lots of peace work behind it. I'm sure there was lots of prayer energy behind it for a very long time. But you can see the joy in some of these pictures of what was happening there as that wall came down. Krista Tippett spent a lot of time in Berlin as a young journalist. Krista Tippett is the author of our new book as we begin this fall study series together. The book is called Becoming Wise, an inquiry into the mystery and the art of living. She said that the Berlin Wall fell more like a whimper than a bang, and that all at once it seemed like fear of an entire country lifted. Miracles happen all the time. Walls get knocked down all the time. There must have been, I don't know how many people that believed it could never happen. And still, there were enough that believed it could and that worked for that cause that it did. Walls can tumble. Miracles do happen. How did it fall, though? How did it really happen? Yes, peace work and prayers, sure, but what's inside the peace work and prayers, right? Inside there, there's lots of conversation, productive conversation that happens, whether we're praying and having our own conversation with Spirit, or we're praying together and we're speaking out loud our prayers, or we're doing peace work and mediation work and we're speaking across the different ideologies to try to resolve the situation. Those conversations were productive because of something else. What's inside that? Embedded in that is listening. Listening. Listening is the practice and the pathway to wisdom. In our 12 Powers series, we talked about the power of wisdom not long ago, just a couple of weeks ago. And when we talked about that, we talked about how wisdom is the power to discern, the power to make wise choices, the power to choose the things that are highest and best for us through the insights that we receive. But how do we get there? Listening. Listening is a key requirement to wisdom, to gaining wisdom on this journey to becoming wise together that we have initiated. There are study groups, many of them. You can sign up for one out on the patio if you want to take this message deeper and meet new people and walk together over these next 6 weeks in that way. If you don't want to do a study group, but you want to follow along in the book, there are books in the bookstore. So whatever ways you decide to plug in, I welcome you and all of us into this journey of intentional wisdom, of becoming wise together as a community and individually, and all the ripples that come from that decision. Tippett writes that listening is about being present, not just about being quiet. As I tuned in more deeply to my own feelings during the pandemic, I came bumping up against a feeling that wasn't a common one for me or a frequent one for me, anxiety. And I've noticed that it's still here. It still continues. It's sort of like an ocean wave for me. It comes, it sort of waves in, and then it goes back out. It recedes. Anybody experience this? A little heightened anxiety? Yeah. So what we are tapping into is a collective anxiety. There is collective anxiety. And it's understandable that there is. We're living in times that we're told are existential. And so there's a heightening around that. And of course, lots of things that have happened in our world enhance that idea. But the thing is that we're approaching this collective anxiety in a way that isn't enough. It isn't sufficient. What we tend to use in our Western culture is our brains. And our brains are fabulous, and they have all kinds of untapped potential. But that's just it. We've not tapped a lot of it. And so, as Krista Tippett says, it's really the teenage brain that we're using. She says the 21st century globe resembles the understanding we now have of the teenage brain. Dramatically uneven, immensely powerful, creative at times and places, and reckless and destructive in others. As spiritual beings, though, we know we have so much more at our disposal. Yes, we have our thinking minds and our intellect for sure, but there's so much more, right? There's a beating heart filled with compassion. There's the spiritual practices that we can reach for. There's the knowing that we have access to the divine intelligence of the universe, that wisdom is available to us and as us and through us, even tapped here in our own bodies, where scientists say we have a second brain. And so there's so much more to us and so much more to the potential and so much more that can address the questions of our time that cause this ripple of anxiety to rise in many of us. What can calm anxiety is our spiritual practice, is listening itself, listening within to spirit, becoming present, feeling our feet against the earth, feeling that support, following the breath. It is a magical tool we carry with us at all times, the breath. It resets. It allows us to connect with the presence. It allows us to connect with any one of our 12 powers at any given time. One or two or three breaths can shift everything. In a conversation, in a situation, in a moment of tension, it can ease tension in the body. There's so much that comes from the practice that we know that encapsulates the breath. Most often, there are movement practices and there is sitting practice, but it's all really meditation. Listening and meditation. Allow us to enter in, open up to a timelessness, a kind of nothingness, which, you know, our culture also doesn't like the idea of nothingness. And so everything sort of fights against us, right, as we move into these spiritual deeper places. But the mystical path, we know as we enter more meditative time, we enter into that wide expanse, that deep place of the presence. And it takes us into timelessness. It takes us into nothingness. And we also know that in the mystical path, nothingness is everythingness. Right? Because it is out of that impulse of nothingness, out of the sheer presence, that everything is created. And we want to co-create from that space. So out of that everythingness, that nothingness that leads to everythingness, that comes from the breath, that comes from the practice of meditation, is everything good and everything true and everything alive. It all is sort of counterintuitive. You know, you think, oh, you know, practicing meditation is going to make me just really chilled out and really peaceful. And yet, in actuality, it brings forth more joy and more aliveness and more of all those things that seem like they're so extroverted. But that kind of energy is drawn from the place within us. The literal power of now cannot be overstated from so many different directions, but the kind of power of now, I'm really talking about this presence. You know, Eckhart Tolle was an academic. He was a professor in a university when he had a spiritual enlightenment experience. And in that experience, he entered into a place of pure consciousness. He dropped all of his roles. He sat on a park bench for 2 years and just listened. Tapped that inner power of wisdom, meditated in the presence, until he was guided to clothe his spirit again and to come back out into the world with a new role, taking up that new role with great consciousness, with great awareness that it came directly from spirit. He went from being an academic, intellectual teacher of knowledge to a bearer of spiritual wisdom. Now, we can do anything, right? You can be a professor and still be a bearer of wisdom. You can take out the garbage down the street and still be a bearer of wisdom. It doesn't matter what we do. It's the consciousness with which we do it, no matter what it is. And so that is what we're really after when we're walking this journey. Listening within uncovers gems. It uncovers insight. Humanity, many, many years ago, made a collective turn in a time of upheaval. So, you know, these things have happened before. They're different. Yes, time is different. We live in a worldwide web of technology and connection that is different. There's lots of things that are different. But there are also these waves through history that are very similar. And so at this time, from about 800 BC to 300 BC or BCE, about a 500-year period, there was this time called the Axial Age. And during this era, there was an awakening. And during the awakening, most of the world's religions sprung up. Krista Tippett puts it this way, in an utterly disconnected cultures, in a time of upheaval, Confucius was born in China. The Buddha sought enlightenment. Plato and Aristotle examined life and mind and soul. And the Hebrew prophets began to pen a people of God into being. These are just some of the things that were happening during that period of time. It's called the Axial Age because it's believed that it was a time that everything was turned on its axis. That we went into a transformative period in which we weren't just thinking localized, but we began to think in a broader way. Transcendent thought came into humanity. And in that transcendent thought, an insight arose, an awakening, a question. Could it be? Could it be? By looking within during this age of turning and looking within, that humans started wondering about the well-being of others beyond their own kin and tribe. Suddenly, it started to become more obvious, at least to some, that the stranger and the orphan and the outcast was tied to our own well-being as well. That awakening that happened so very long ago, we're touching it again, aren't we? Maybe in a new way, in a different way, but roundabout we go again to a similar kind of time. And during that time, an inquiry arose out of that wondering about this sense of well-being and our connection to one another as a human family. And questions came up like, what does it mean to be human? What really matters in life? What is mine to do in service to humanity? Way back then and now. The turbulence of our world now signals that we are in a new kind of axial age, that there is a new spiritual awakening happening, that the earth beneath our feet is kind of rumbling, right? And those little feelings of nervous energy in the air. You know, I remember one of my communication teachers would point out that one of my classmates who seemed really nervous was actually not nervous, but passionate. And it was the passion that was bubbling beneath the surface that wanted just a way out that we were experiencing and seeing. And once he called that out, her speaking was amazing. And so it's the same for us. There's a shaking, there's a feeling, there's a nervousness in the air, but it's like not just scary, it's scary exciting. You know, it's like there's an excitement of being alive at this time, to be a part of this forthcoming of a whole new age, of turning the world on its axis, of moving humanity into a whole new way of being and seeing and understanding and connection and a recognition, ultimately, of our oneness, ultimately of the love that binds us together all the way across the globe with far-flung strangers all around. We are a worldwide web connected not just in technology, but in that underlying heartbeat of God, in the one breath, in the one heartbeat. And when we recognize, I feel a little anxious, yeah, we might have something going on in our personal lives, but there's also something bigger happening, and that's what we're being called into now. That's what we signed up for. I mean, I was going to invite you to see if you wanted to sign up, but I see you're sitting here, so I know you did. Somehow, some way, before we came into this embodied presence, we said yes. And so to remember that we did, and now the excitement and the aliveness to know that we are a part of it. So next time you start feeling glum or you start feeling like worried about the world and where we're headed and where we're going, consider the fact that you get to be here now while the world turns on its axis, while another great breakthrough happens. One of our contemporaries, Joanna Macy, who I think even lives in the Bay Area still, says that it is the time of the great turning. That's the era we live in now, the great turning. And she specifies that the great turning is a shift from industrial growth society to a life-sustaining civilization. We must turn, right? We know this. We all know this. The great turn is upon us. We are in the turn. We are making the turn. Some of us are getting dizzy in the turn. You know, some of us are worried we're going to fall out on the turn. You know, there's those feelings around. But it's okay. It's okay. In fact, it's more than okay. It's fabulous. It's miraculous because walls tumble. Things happen that we believe would never happen. The Berlin Wall, poof, down, because fear lifted over a whole country. Fear and anxiety, they're just temporary experiences. temporary human condition experiences. They float through. They come through like an ocean wave, and then they recede. And in the receding, we can walk the beach more clearly. We can walk the earth more clearly. We can see into the horizon more fully. And we can choose to let the waters come and get in the waters ourselves or run from them gleefully or whatever it is that we choose, however it is that we interact with what comes to us and through us and as us that meets us on our path day after day after day is an opportunity to open a door, to knock down a wall. These walls are not just about civilization as a whole and humanity as a whole. There are individual walls, right? The walls we put up around our heart, the walls of limitation that we put up with our mind that says, I can't, or but, or only, or if, or when, or never, right? All those ways that we box ourselves in to say, I must live in this small space, and our spirit is going, oh, please let me out. There's all this magnificence inside of us, busting to come out of the seams. It's like a high-heeled pink shoe walking across the black and white street in East Berlin. That's you. That's your spirit. It's alive. It's joyful. You know, and joy, sometimes we just get so confused by this. We think it's just about extroversion and dancing and singing and being joyful. And yes, it's all really wonderful. But it's a deep, abiding joy that is in us at all times that we can breathe into and go, ah, all is well. Joy is here. God is here. Spirit is here, guiding me every step of the way. The thing about this era is we have been through some other transformative spiritual eras. You might remember the New Thought era that happened at the turn of the 20th century. All of this, unity, everything sprung forth out of that time. And what happened during that time was an awareness of this power within us, an awareness that the divine doesn't just live out here. We don't just beseech and beg and pray and negotiate in that way, but it actually moves through us. We are the prayer, in fact. We have the I am, the power of that spirit in us, and all of its 12 powers that radiate from us in all these different ways that they show up. And as we awaken to that individually, this is another change in our spiritual understanding, that it's not just about us. For so long, we've been on this sort of me generation, me, myself, and I, and, you know, what do we call it, self-help kind of role, which is, I'm not, you know, making fun of that. That's all good. We needed some of that. We had it when we needed it, and now we've graduated from it. We've matured from it. Now we recognize that the spiritual journey is not just about getting the goodies for ourselves. It's not just about being blissed out. It's not just about having the experience of, oh, I'm in the divine flow. Good for me. No. Where our feet really hit the ground is in service for all. That's what happened when we came together as a committee years ago to come up with our mission statement here at Unity. And we said, okay, so let's describe who we are first. Well, we're loving and inclusive. Well, we're growing into inclusive. And we're loving. We've got that down pretty well, but you can always expand in love, right? So the idea of a mission is that it's bigger than you, right? You affirm it, but you're growing into it. In the middle part, we're living and expanding our divinity. Yeah, that's really the essence, right? That's what it's about. But then the committee was like, I don't know, something's missing. That's not the end of the story. Ah, in sacred service for all. Why would I want to become enlightened? So I could share it. Why do we want to do it? Why does an author write a book? So they can get their message out. Why does anybody get excited about a product or service that they're selling or marketing? Because they believe in it and they want other people's lives to light up and be better because of it. That's when we know we're on purpose, we're in our passion, is when we are living in that stream that says, I am contributing something out of the spiritual practices and the deep listening that I've been doing. They're the gems that come from it all. So this listening, this idea of listening, you know, when we think about conversation, the sages across time and space, they are the ones who understand that in a conversation, the greater weight is put on the listening over the talking. And you'll notice that over time and space, if you think about people that in history or those that you might follow, that those who have that kind of quiet listening space bring forth a kind of wisdom when they do speak. We were just talking about this at, I don't know where, a staff meeting or a meeting this week. Rachel Naomi Raymond is one of these kinds of people. She wrote Kitchen Table Wisdom, and she's a medical doctor. And she would teach other doctors the practice of generous listening. Who doesn't appreciate a doctor who's a generous listener, right? And of course, it's relevant for all of us. It's not just about doctors. And so the tenets of generous listening look like this: a commitment to curiosity, a willingness to be surprised, a letting go of assumptions. I always have to read that one twice for myself. A letting go of assumptions. Allowing space for mistakes. Yeah. These are probably just some of them. But you know, what if you, in your next conversation, intended to be generous in your listening in one or all of these ways? What if you just said, okay, I'm going to commit to curiosity through this whole conversation. And maybe I'll even let go of some assumptions. And see how your conversations shift and change as you do this. Oh, allow room for mistakes. And so all of that that we can open to and let ourselves be pleasantly surprised. When we do, we open up the walls and access the unity and the freedom that we wish to access, that we wish to experience. So our conversations with others can be deliberately a kind of involving a deliberate invocation of the divine, a deliberate invitation. That's what we do here when we start everything, right? A meeting, a service, a class. We start with prayer. We start with prayer to invoke the divine, to open ourselves to that presence, to recognize what is present here. We're really saying, we invite you in to be a part, right? As Jesus said, wherever two or more are gathered, there I am in the midst of you. Jesus is often misunderstood as speaking for himself, the man, but he wasn't speaking for himself, the man. He was speaking for the Christ or the divine consciousness. He was saying, there it is, in the midst of you, where two or more are gathered in my name, through prayer, through invocation, through asking, through opening, through inviting the divine. We experience more of it, and the whole experience then becomes more powerful, more wise. In the practice of counsel, two talking pieces are traditionally used. And so the participants can be two or more people, as many people as you want. And one talking piece is for the participants to use when they want to speak from their own hearts. But the other talking piece is called the third. It's for the third. It's for that presence that we recognize that is there. And so sometimes we feel guided to say something that's coming from this higher wisdom, this bigger picture space beyond my personal concerns and your personal concerns. There's something bigger here that wants to be spoken to, presenced in the room. And so we, through the power of our own divinity, grab that talking piece and let it speak through us with wisdom. So there are many ways for us to call this forth, to allow the divinity within all of us to be present on this walk. The spirit breathes and has its being in a world today that is vast with possibilities and really close amongst the people, right? We have a growing closeness with people at the same times that the spiritual possibilities are becoming more and more vast. And so that connection, that recognition that we are all in this together, that we are one, is important. On this path of wisdom, or on any path, I love to have a map. How about you? So Krista Tippett says that this book is a map. She says that this book is a map, an important territory that we are now growing in together. It's a collection of pointers that treat the margins as seriously as the noisy center. She says change has always happened in the margins across human history, and it's happening here now. Spiritual geniuses are everywhere. They're in front of you and beside you today. They're right there in your own seat. And the spiritual geniuses, she says, they're in the margins. They don't have publicists. This is the era where celebrity becomes less important. and recognition of all of our importance becomes more and more common. You're a spiritual genius. Can you own that? Can you look in the mirror in the morning and say, I am a spiritual genius, and really mean it? After you say it for a while, you'll start to believe it more and more if you're on the fence about that. But as you look around and you notice in this room, as you move out onto the patio and you look around or into the bookstore, as you get in your car and you go wherever you go today and in the days to come, see the spiritual geniuses all around you. Notice that we are everywhere present. We don't have publicists, maybe. We might be in the margins, but we're the ones who are going to turn the world on its axis. We're the ones who are going to participate in the great turning. We're the ones who are going to bring forth these new thought ideas of the divine I am that can help us all become wise and make great choices. Humans are Homo sapiens, wise beings. That's what we came in as, and that's what we're learning to be. So together, I want to invite us to knock down walls through generous listening. Let's say it together. I release my spiritual genius and knock down walls by generous listening. And so it is. And thank you all.